Hello and welcome once again to Mustard Seed Ministries, Christianity Making Sense. We're trying to get a very brief overview of God's creation, where it started and where it's going. Now, we are talking about a subject that is bigger than man, so we will try to be very brief and not make a lot of absolute dichotomous statements. Rather, we'll throw out some thoughts, some ideas, so that we can get a better view of what God was trying to do with mankind, what he's trying to do today and yesterday, and perhaps a little bit about the future. The first session talked about the beginning, a little bit about where life came from and so on, so my thoughts and ideas on this. The second part talked a little bit about how we're made in his image. He said we were different than the animals and we were made differently. What is different about us? We talked a little bit about that. Again, the briefest of overviews. We're just trying to get kind of a big picture so that it makes a little more sense. And in this one, we're going to talk a little bit about life. We're going to throw some ideas out about life from Adam to the great flood. Some people call it Noah's flood. But there was a lot of culture that existed between Adam, the first man and woman, Eve, and the flood. What was it like? Well, we don't know a lot about it, but we're going to talk a little bit about it and maybe explore a few thoughts. What I'd like to start with first is a very favorite subject of mine that we studied in high school. It was about the alchemist. Okay, now I don't know if you know much about alchemistry, but these people were kind of mystical folks. Everything they did, there was different areas of life that they explored, but one of the ones that fascinated me was the little gray-haired man with the long beard, and he, in this case he had a pointed cap, and they were all, he was in a room and there were all kinds of chemicals bubbling and a Bunsen burner of some type that he was boiling some stuff with. And he was very alert, and he was concentrating intensely on his solution that he was boiling. There were charts on the wall of all different types and descriptions, and to me it was a fascinating room, but what he was trying to do was even more fascinating to me. He was trying to take a common element like lead, change the molecular structure of it, and turn it into gold. Now, they really believed that they could do this, and they spent years trying to perfect a method to be able to do that. But even though they were persistent, and they did have some basic skills in science, they never were able to turn lead into gold. I guess maybe that's not really much of a surprise to us. You know, some people say that life really doesn't have a lot of free lunches. And in this case, I believe it was true. What does this have to do with the subject today? Life between the first parents, Adam and Eve, and the great flood. We'll get back to the alchemist in just a few minutes here. But first, let's take a look at what happened to the experiment that God started, the experiment of mankind and the animals on earth. You know, it started off great. It started off as a paradise, and we know that man rejected God. So what had become of man? He had begun to trust in himself and things besides God. Had it led to a great life, to freedom? Let me read you what the Bible says in Genesis 6, starting in verse 5. The Lord saw how great that man's wickedness on the earth had become, that every inclination of the thoughts of his heart was only evil all the time. The Lord was grieved that he had made man on earth, and his heart was filled with pain. So the Lord said, I will wipe mankind, whom I have created, from the face of the earth, men and animals, and creatures that move along the ground, and birds of the air, for I am grieved that I have made them. But Noah found favor in the eyes of the Lord. And skipping down to 13. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all the people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I'm going to destroy both them and the earth. When man turns his back on God, it appears that he loses his ability to rule properly. He loses his ability to have a society that is dignified and noble and just and loving. See, man was never designed to do it on his own. He was designed to do it in dependence on God. And God would live through him. He would move his heart and his mind to do things that were just, to protect the innocent, to love others, and to look at others' needs at the same of his own, as we see in the New Testament. But when humanity turns their back, or when a society turns their back on God, what takes the place of this love and this justice and, in a sense, mercy? It is violence. That's what was happening. It was anarchy after Adam and before the great flood. It was the rule of the jungle, survival of the fittest. And if there was any weak, any that could not stand up to this, they were probably brutalized and misused and used. What can then be done to keep man within certain bounds so that the brutal men, the violent men, the aggressive men, do not precipitate to the top, bubble to the top, and begin to destroy others and destroy society as it is, for the sake of power and greed and pleasure? Well, my friend, I believe that's why we have the rule of law. I'm not sure that there was much of rule of law in those days before the flood. But afterwards, I think that society begin to use laws that forced men to live within certain guidelines so that they could have a society that was fairly just, at least somewhat just, and that everybody didn't do what they wanted. They couldn't just take from their neighbor anything they wanted. They had to live by laws. And what does law do? Why does law help mankind to patrol itself, to temper itself, to govern itself? It is because there is punishment for those who break the law. That's just simply what it is. If you break the law, then you will be punished. See, law rules by fear and not by love. But it is imperative for society, if it wants to exist as a just, as a somewhat righteous society, there must be laws, good laws, at least many good laws, most good laws, if it is to be able to pull this off. Now, we might ask the question, is this what God wanted when he created man and society in general? I don't think so. I think what he really wanted was what he had right at the beginning with Adam before he fell. And that was, he lived in man's heart. We lived in his heart, and we were dependent on him. And he provided love and nourishment for us. And he also provided insight. We could see what is right and wrong. We could see how to treat our neighbor in a way that would bring harmony. It would be a win-win for all of us, because we would learn to live in harmony, being able to help one another, being able to love and accept one another as God loved and accepted us, learning to forgive one another as God was forgiving us. This, I believe, is the way that he wanted it. Because when God lives in a person's heart and he steers us, he can steer us in the right direction. He becomes a law within our heart, and we don't have to worry so much about the external laws. We're going to do the requirements of just laws because God is in our heart, steering us and giving us the ability, the power, and the insight to be able to live the right way. Now let's go back to the alchemist. As he is cheerfully bubbling his brew in his little office, surrounded by all of his charts and all of his chemicals. He's got that piece of lead, that hunk of lead laying there, and he's been working hard for perhaps years to turn that into gold. And he is not deterred by anything. He still believes that that lead can be turned to something precious, to gold. What is he like? What does it have to do with mankind in this stage and even today? Well, here's what it's about. As we saw, when man left God, his heart became evil. Well, his heart basically was evil. And the evil began to bubble out into society. And it turned the society into a violent society. And I think if you would ask the people there, they would feel like they were in bondage. They weren't free, because where the Spirit of God is, there's liberty. And there's freedom from sin and the evil inclinations of our heart. And it wasn't there anymore. So I believe that the people were very unhappy in that state before the flood, and probably being terrorized by one another. Now, today we find the alchemists of the soul, and they're called, I think, humanists, are those who believe that the heart of man is basically good. Now, that would be a great assumption to make. Wouldn't it be wonderful if the heart of man was really good, and all we had to do is just, you know, make sure that our lives did not have a lot of conflict and abuse and so on, and we would all just thrive and turn into good people, to stay good people, and there'd be so many good, virtuous acts that would come out of our society. Wouldn't that be wonderful? To me, yes, that would be wonderful. But on the other hand, if someone told me the sun comes up in the west, even though I may want it to, I know that it's not true. And that's what we have to do when we look at our hearts. We have to realize that though we would wish that to be true, it simply is not true. And left alone, my friend, if you really believe that we would be better off without God or without the rule of law, you are a fool, it says in the Bible. And not only that, you would lose your happiness and your freedom. I will just about guarantee you that that would happen if you had your way about society. It's wrong. Humanism is wrong. If it was right, we wouldn't have had Rwanda and all the killing and murder and brutality. We would not have had the world wars and the wars that happen now. We would have not had the Holocaust. When you take away the restraints of virtue, the moral restraints in society, and then also perhaps the rule of law, you open that society to a great deal of bondage and unhappiness, violence, and evil. Man, my friend, is not basically good. Something must be done about that if we are to have any hope of doing what is right. Changing man's heart by just changing behavior, or by using some external force to change his heart, is like that alchemist. It's wishful thinking. See, that alchemist started with lead, and he ended up with lead. The humanists, are those who think that the heart of man is good, start off with an evil heart, and they finish with an evil heart. It is not the reformation of the soul of man from the outside that changes it into something precious, but there is a way, my friend, to do that. And so man, left on his own, had created his own hell. He had created a society that was corrupt and evil and violent, and you can name all kinds of things that were going on in that society. It certainly did not have the love that God had meant for man to have in his dealings with one another. So man had created this himself, left on his own, and now he would pay the price. I believe that towards the end, when Noah built the ark, I believe that God saw in mankind, and there may have been billions of people by then, we don't know that, but he had created a society, man had created such a society that he was no longer capable of reaching out to God. And when that happens, then God calls an end to it. See, God is not a wimp. He's not afraid to do that. He's not afraid to throw the switch. He's not afraid to judge a group of people if they become so corrupt that they will not change and accept him. And this is what happened. And let me read you a little bit about what Genesis says about this great flood. I'm going to read now in Genesis chapter 6, and I'm going to skip around a little bit in Genesis chapter 6 of the Bible, and then go into 7 and skip around a little bit in 7. We're trying to get a picture of what happened with this flood. What was this flood all about? And we'll have a little bit of a illustration here as we read these few verses. So God said to Noah, I'm going to put an end to all people, for the earth is filled with violence because of them. I'm surely going to destroy both them and the earth. So make yourself an ark of cypress wood. Make rooms in it and coat it with pitch, inside and out. This is how you are to build it. The ark is to be 450 feet long, 75 feet wide, and 45 feet high. And skipping down, I'm going to bring floodwaters on the earth to destroy all life under the heavens, every creature that has breath of life in it. Everything on earth will perish, but I will establish my covenant with you, and you will enter the ark, you and your sons and your wife and your son's wife with you. You are going to bring into the ark two of all living creatures, male and female, to keep them alive with you. Two of every kind of bird, of every kind of animal, of every kind of creature that moves along the ground will come to you to be kept alive. Skipping down a little further, in the 600th year of Noah's life, on the 17th day of the second month, on that day all the springs of the great deep burst forth, and the floodgates of heavens were opened, and rain fell on the earth 40 days and 40 nights. On that very day Noah and his sons, Shem, Ham, and Japheth, together with their wife and the wives of his three sons, entered the ark. Skipping again down, for 40 days the flood kept coming on the earth, and as the waters increased, they lifted the ark high above the earth. The waters rose and increased greatly on the earth, and the ark floated on the surface of the water. They rose greatly on the earth, and all the high mountains under the entire heavens were covered. The waters rose and covered the mountains to a depth of more than 20 feet. Every living thing that moved on earth perished. Birds, livestock, wild animals, all the creatures that swarm on the earth, and all mankind, everything on dry land that had the breath of life in its nostrils died. One of the things this tells me, again, is that God is not a wimp. He means what he says, and he has the power to pull it off. A society that totally rejects him and turns from him is going to be judged, and there's going to be consequences, and they're going to be horrible consequences. You know, the interesting thing is, I believe these people had a chance. If they would have just turned to the Lord before a wind, I believe, came down off the mountains, and as it moved down off the mountains, the chance for humanity to find mercy was becoming slimmer and slimmer. And when it finally reached the door of the ark and lifted it and slammed it shut, the day of mercy was over for these people. You know, it must have been terrible to be on that ark. And as the waters rose, the people had to be pounding on the door. They knew that this ark was the only way out. But see, their heart hadn't changed. They were just afraid. And so they were looking for a place to hide and to be safe. And can you imagine someone sitting inside the ark, listening to this pounding of humanity, the wail that must have went out from all of these thousands of people that were close to the ark, and what it did to their heart? You know, I can just see one of those young wives sitting there and perhaps even crying for all those neighbors that wouldn't listen, for all those people who had a chance and now had no more chance, who had to face their maker without really knowing him. It must have been a terrible thing to sit there and listen to that. And then I'm sure that the thought came into their minds as they sat in that ark and rocked, and as the violent waves moved them and the winds blew, I'm sure they had to think, now what will happen? What will this world be like when we land somewhere and the waters go down and the door of the ark opens once again?